I had my uncle order it because all I need is my mother-in-law finding that in the mail.
We started with Playboy and went downhill from there.
Yep.
We did. Okay. Cords are relatively good.
Got our wires uncrossed.
Our 50-cent connector isn't working well. But let's give it a countdown anyway.
That being said.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is Wayne Youngblood with Regency Superior Auctions, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 56. I'm sitting here with Kaz and Jeff and Dawn, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter, Stamp Show HT. You can call us and leave a message at any time at country code 1-949-873-4298 on a Google Voice answering machine. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher, and so many more. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news. Who is Eduardo Muñez?
I saw him in Scarface. He's one of the guys that get hits when he says, "Say hello to my little friend." Right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that him?
Guy.
Is that him?
No wonder they can't send anything to him.
Hashtag Sam Stories, hashtags Freaks and Errors the Movie. And our expert topic of the week is The Promised, part 2 of selling stamps on eBay. Along with, we're going to clean out all our little bits and pieces of topics that we didn't cover or need to follow up on for the year. So, stamp news. Who is Eduardo Muñez? There is always a kind of mystery about the people who lived in the house before you. What did they look like? What was their job? There are subtle clues in the mail you receive addressed to them, but in the end, they are just names without faces. What would happen if one of those unfamiliar individuals started getting more letters than you? Several years ago, a terribly sick actress by the name of Ruth Tapp was convalescing in her home after suffering a life-threatening illness. She had found her life incredibly mundane until one day she started receiving mail addressed to Mr. Eduardo Muñez. At first, it was one letter. One letter turned into three or four. Three or four turned into a pile, as more and more of them kept getting delivered to her house from all over the world. Her only clue into the mystery are all the various return addresses attached to the envelopes. She has returned many of them, but they just kept coming. She had no idea who the man is or why she's getting his mail. But the story intrigued her greatly. Before she knew it, her creative mind as an actress turned to writing, and she had a script in her hands. The script was quickly picked up and is currently being turned into a full-length movie. The producer, Joseph Teague, and director, Laura Parker,
both co-inventors of the tube sock,
are thrilled with this script because it is so simple. It is a framework for not only Ruth's story, but their own as well. So, the questions comes down to this. Who is Eduardo Muñez? The filmmakers and actors are desperate to answer the riddle and are seeking him out. Until the question is answered, you can join the search for the real Eduardo Muñez, who is the guy that inspired our convalescing writer. Why did he get so much mail? Follow hashtag WhoIsEduardoM on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and tell the team to find the real Eduardo Muñez. They will really like to thank him personally for inspiring such a wonderful story.
I am Eduardo Muñez. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Sorry.
Well, wouldn't... I mean, I know you're not supposed to open up other people's mail, but...
Oh, I'd want to so bad.
Yeah, it's like who... You know, maybe it's like a patent for a new design of a tube sock or something like that.
You never know.
Yeah.
So we have been asked to pass to our listeners the following challenge to assist with the production. Please send personal letters to Mr. Eduardo Muñez. Address 272 Waterloo Street, next line. Newcastle upon T-Y-N-E, next line. Capital N-E-1, 4-D-J, next line. United Kingdom. And the deadline for the letters is March 2016. So you have some time.
Well, what happens if you miss the deadline?
Then the mail just keeps coming.
Yeah, it's like... it doesn't seem like there's any real drawback of missing that deadline.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there's a plus side, though, if you do make the deadline. If you get your letters in time, the production company wants to use... Because obviously the woman tried to return as many of them as she could. So she has pictures of them, but not the actual letters anymore.
Oh.
So they're needing people to help make new ones for props for the movies. So anything you send to this address is going to be in the film. Because they need a mountain of various different looking letters. So if you want to have something that you made in a movie, send something to that address. And it's going to get into the production.
Most interesting.
So the directions are, the film team is looking to use as many letters received as possible in the production of the film. Please be sure to write your sender details on the back of the envelope, as the letters will not be opened until after the film is complete. So they're going to record the opening of all the letters after the production at the production wrap party.
Yeah, but
all
our letters are going to say, hey, I hope you do well with the movie, or here is Tube Sock.
Yeah, pretty much.
You're sending a tube sock?
I think I'll send a tube sock.
We need to send a big, gigantic package.
Oh.
With a box of tube socks in it.
Oh, my God.
To Eduardo Munez.
Yep.
Very English name, though. You know, he's in Newcastle upon Tyne. So, you know, that's like probably Scandinavian in origin, maybe... relative of Harald Hardrada or something.
Something weird like that.
Yeah. It's,
so if you want to get on the fun, definitely send a letter to who you think this guy is, or, you know, maybe send him Confessions of Love, or, you know.
Our prior podcast, those 17th century letters in Amsterdam. They can just send them all to Eduardo Munez.
Turn this into the next post secret.
Yeah,
pretty send much. Your confessions to this guy.
Right?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I smell my boogers. Send that to Mr. Eduardo Munez. Okay, hashtag STEM stories. Our friend at Freaks and Errors Film is currently at $10,000 and some change. Pledged towards their $17,000 goal, and they've 8 days left. I don't know, but it seems like it's gaining steam.
Well, yeah, we're involved. That's at least a little steam.
Even our Facebook and even our LinkedIn has exploded with people going, oh my goodness, thank you so much for interviewing this guy. We knew about this project, and, you know, we're so happy to hear that they're starting to do this again.
Well, if you're so happy about it, go give them some freaking money.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, I really promoted them yesterday, because yesterday was Giving Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
So I posted everything on our social media about their project.
Yeah, but today is Stingy Wednesday, so.
Yeah.
Tomorrow's, not getting anything today.
Tomorrow's Bah Humbug Thursday, I mean.
Oh, on my way home, I'm picking up my Festivus poll.
Oh, no. Oh,
so yes. So there will be a Festivus poll here for the next podcast.
Oh, joy.
One here and one at the house.
That's it.
Joy to the poll.
Oh, good grief.
Okay, so let's get this movie made, you guys. There's still 8 days to go. There's 51 backers. And if we all give... I mean, it's $100 to get a T-shirt, but it's a really darn good T-shirt.
Well, how much
stamps?
They need, what, 11 or 9,000
more? About 7,000.
That means that if each of our listeners gave like 40 cents, we'd be there?
Yeah.
Oh, make it more than that. You know statistics. Yes. Everybody give $5. Come on.
There if you give 500, you get 2 T-shirts.
Ooh. But two, you get other three. Stuff, too. It's
oh,
the
no,
only
3
thing
T-shirts.
Get.
Sorry.
Let's make a Festivus miracle.
Oh,
there we go.
Let's see. 500, you get an invitation to the film, signed movie poster, Freaks and Errors T-shirts, a custom design signed postcard, a sticker, a collection of stamps from the director's personal collection with a personalized stamp album and a DVD or Blu-ray of the film. And your name in the credits.
Ooh.
So $500, that's a good amount. And for $5,000, you get co-producer credit. Invitation to the film premiere, travel not included. Dinner on us, and a signed movie poster, three limited edition t-shirts, custom designed signed postcard.
Awesome. By definition, aren't all the t-shirts limited edition?
Probably.
I mean, it's not like they're making an infinite number of any of them.
No. So you get a sticker, DVD, Blu-ray, and some more stamps. So you can buy stamps with this.
And you get into the drawing to win a 1 cent magenta.
There you go.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Or to see a movie about the 1 cent magenta.
No, they reissued it, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, we chopped them up and did all kinds of fun things with them.
Oh, the commemorative. Yes, yeah. There are commemoratives of the stamp. We'll give you one.
Yeah.
So, let's get this movie made, you guys. We can do this.
Commercial ended.
Commercial about awesome movie over. Okay, so, Cash, what you got in your pile of stuff?
Well, hail fellows, well met. This is addressing everything from probably 50 episodes ago plus.
Good grief.
Yeah, it all just collects here.
That's true. You guys should see it. He has like this mountain of stickies and articles and things he thinks he's going to talk about and forgets. And
well, it's first, his year-end roundup.
Yes.
Yeah.
First of all, a correction. In the last podcast, I said that Aeropex was in November. It's in February. I misspoke.
That's a big difference.
Big difference.
I thought so.
So, Arizona in February, which is pretty nice, and we'll be at Aeropex. Second of all, an interesting statistic, a whopping 80% of people think whopping is a funny word.
Shaking of heads. No silence.
This goes back a ways. When we were talking about the first stamps of the United States, and they were revenue stamps. There is very, very, very few of them out there. You can find the Stamp Act of 1765 stamps used in Canada and from the Caribbean, but it was so hated in America that they have only a small handful of them that a collector could actually get.
Huh.
So that's very interesting. If you want the first stamp of the United States, you're probably not going to be able to get one. You'll get one used in Canada or the Caribbean.
But yet it's still a U.S. stamp.
Well, we were all the same country.
Oh, that's right. It was all the same place. Okay. Yeah. So sent it. Oh, interesting.
We used to all be buddies.
That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is Mad Magazine in 1964 put out a magazine with a whole bunch of stamps in it, including Alfred E. Newman for president and the like. Yes, somebody asked me about that, and I actually went out and got a couple of them. They are most interesting, and there's one of them for the Dag Hammarskjöld invert sheet. And it talks about the person named Leonard Sherman who found the original and thought that he had found like a sheet of C3As. And the post office said, oh, no, you didn't. We're going to print a million of these and make yourself valueless. So that's his story. Let's see.
So is the moral of that story, if you do find something like that, to wait for a few years and let it kind of go away before you bring it up?
That would be probably smart in that case. Although, you know, it was a weird time where the post office said, we are not going to let people take advantage of this sort of stuff.
And yet now they do the 4806D, the inverted,
right,
uninverted Jenny sheets.
It's all up to the postmaster.
That's
true.
Mm-hmm. Regards to the last podcast, the Playboy that the stamp article is in is the July 2003 Playboy, and it is only one page. So you'll have to find something else to look in that magazine.
Just like anything in Playboy, it's got a lot of really pretty pictures of the stamps. Well, it's mostly the pictures of the stamps. The article itself is really short.
Yeah. You know, I haven't seen a Playboy in like decades. and but I've seen Maxims. Mm-hmm. And now I know why Playboy is going out of business, because it really is a boring magazine.
Yeah.
A person sent me a German stamp and said, hey, you know, these are Germany is very serious about their gum conditions. And a stamp that's in never hinged condition may literally be 15 times catalog value of one in hinged condition. So this stamp I'm holding in my hand, I'll hold it up to the microphone here so everybody can see it. Yes, you have to be aware that stamps get regummed, and when they regum them, they are never hinged. So you have to double check how you tell regums. And again, this is several episodes ago. Is you look in the perf holes, and the perforations were drilled through the paper after the gum was put on. So if there's gum in the perforation holes, it means that the gum was put on after the perforation holes were drilled. And of course, it's not really drilled, they're punched, but I like drilled better. It's a neater word. So be aware that when you're looking at these things, yes, you do have to deal with never hinged, especially in Germany.
And it's really easy to, honestly, if you have a good high-powered magnifying glass, that's all you really need. A loupe would be better. Just look at it under really bright light from the back and tilt it all the way around, looking at the edge at every different possible angle you could conceivably see. It's going to look like little tiny dewdrops on the tips of the perfs and in the perf holes themselves. It's going to be this little shiny clear coat of glaze that's going to be in the holes that really shouldn't be there. And if you're still unsure, go find a modern stamp that's got similar looking gum on the back that you know came from the post office or something that's clean. And that's how it should look comparatively.
The other thing is, and I don't even remember when we were speaking about these, the colors of the U.S. number 65s, and somebody asked, how do you tell pink, the pink color? Because I guess we discussed a lot of colors, but we didn't address the pink.
Oh, yeah, that was episode 11D3.
Yeah. Anyway, number 65s, U.S. number 65s, they were printed in pink. And really, the theory is they were printed in pigeon blood pink at the very beginning. The pigeon blood pink had like a yellow pigment to it that disintegrated when it was subject to light. And so all those pigeon blood pinks turned into pinks. Well, the way that I tell people is that you really want to look for a stamp and you kind of ignore the pink description, but you want to find a lavender sort of cast. It's got sort of like a bluish purplish cast to it. And if you see that bluish purplish, then you've got a pink stamp.
Now, is that, would you say that that kind of cast, what you're thinking of, since this is not exactly a visual show, is kind of how a bluish paper has a bluish cast to it? It's very light, but it is there?
Yeah, except that that gets its bluish cast from a different sort of source. Let me think. It's sort of like, you know what it kind of reminds me of is like when Harry Met Sally, the movie, and when Tom Hanks looks at Nicole Kidman, who was the girl? I forget what it was.
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal looks at who is
Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan. There it is. And she like has her head against the sky, and it's like glowing. That glow is blue because it's blue, but if it was sort of like a bluish purple, then it would be like what the stamp. It's just sort of an aura sort of thing. I mean, if you see it, you will never forget it.
Okay.
And I apologize to Tom Hanks.
For insulting him, Leslie.
Well, maybe I insulted Billy Crystal.
Well, were you confusing it with Moonstruck or something?
No. It's the one where
the movie with the guy and the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Feel good love story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Morning covers. I don't even remember what the question was on them. I guess, yes, they exist or something.
They're really cool. I collect them. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have two of them in my hand that are pretty cool because they also have the letters inside of them, and they're hard to find with letters inside.
Oh, I don't have any that are in tires like that.
Because the letters are really, really depressing. It's always like...
it's so sad.
Yeah. This one here, the lady died like a month after giving birth to a little kid.
Oh, it's so awful.
And you read it, and it's like, ooh.
So that's why I like them, though, because they're creepy.
Yep.
I know I'm weird.
And then second to the last thing is the Russian money stamps. During the revolution, they had some of their stamps printed on cardboard. And on the back of them, they put basically little writing that says, this is money. And so it was a way for them to guarantee they ran out of change. So you'd use a 3-cent stamp as a 3-cent piece. And you could always use it on an envelope, so you know you'd get your 3 cents worth. Didn't work very well because the czar went out of business in a rather tragic way.
Like czars do.
Like czars do. And the last one is I got a cover for the Civil Service Reform Administration from Baltimore. And this is just a related item to my favorite president, Chester Arthur. So that was sitting on my desk, too. So I am...
You got through cleared. The pile?
My pile is clear. Oh, I can start building a new pile now.
A new pile for a new year.
Absolutely. What does that cover have to do with Chester Arthur?
Oh, Chester Arthur was a really big time. In my opinion, he was one of the greatest presidents. He did civil service reform, which we desperately need now. And but, you know, what we're going through right now is exactly what we went through in the 1880s. We just don't learn.
Nope.
Mm-mm. The other thing that I thought was just great about Chester Arthur is he was elected by the political machine at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And when he got into office, all these cronies and everything went up to get their crony payoffs. And he said, you know, this is the office of the president. This is more important. I'm not going to be, you know, a corrupt politician. I'm going to be a really honest guy here. And he handled himself very honestly. And then the third thing is his work ethic really mimics mine. And he's the one who started the phrase, never put off till tomorrow what you can put off till the day after.
Ah.
So, you know, he was what we would consider today a lazy president. But I like it because he got nothing done. And in my opinion... The best president is one that's not going to be doing a lot of stuff, you know, not causing economy crashes and not causing unemployment and welfare hikes and all this stuff. I want somebody who's going to sit there and wave like the Queen of England.
Wow, that's weird, but it's kind of true. Yeah. That makes sense.
And so that's why I like Chester Arthur. Plus, he had cool sideburns and he always dressed impeccably.
Oh, my gosh. Was he one of those ones that had, like, bushes on the sides of his face?
Yes.
And he was the first clothes horse. He was a total clothes horse.
Oh, yeah.
A what?
A clothes horse. When he was elected president, the first thing he did was he went down to Brooks Brothers and ran up a bill that, I forget what, it would be like a $50,000 bill today modified for inflation.
Good grief.
He just said, I'm president. I'm spending money.
I must be well dressed.
But he spent his money.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to get any presidents like that again.
Yep. He also had a first lady, not a wife who was first lady. So he was one of the few who were bachelor presidents.
Oh, yeah, there were a couple of those.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, or there's just presidents like in France who keep divorcing the wife or younger.
Where there's
version.
A first, second, and third lady.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For.
Oh, yesterday.
Minus 10 years every time.
I heard a great bit of trivia yesterday about kings. And the president of France is elected. In the constitution of Andorra, which is on the border between France and Spain, the president or leader of France is the king of Andorra. Mm-hmm. So when you're elected as the president of France, you get a crown with it.
Oh, that's just cool.
Yeah.
Man, they never talk about that part.
Yeah. I'll have to ask Alan. He was born there.
That's funny.
Okay, so I'm going to give it our fan mail address again. Stam Show here today. P.O. Box 6170, Newport Beach, California, 92658. Send us your letters so they can get some fresh beach salty air on them. So Jeff is going to introduce our expert topic of the week today because it's his particular area of interest, along with him and Kaj, actually.
All right, well, if you remember a few episodes ago, I think it was episode 51, we were talking about selling stamps on eBay, and it was a pretty long episode. It was well over an hour long. We actually had to cut it short because we missed some of the things we were going to talk about, so we've still got a few things left that are actually kind of important, especially if you're a new seller. There were a couple of terms and a couple of tips for you. So the first one, which I know at least two of us in this room have had experience with, is problem resolution. Oh. Yay! With your buyers.
So now.
There's two ways you can be affected by problem resolution. One is if the buyer never pays you, and the other one is if the buyer is unhappy. So if the buyer doesn't pay you, you have to wait at least 72 hours as a grace period for payment after the auction ends. You can then file an unpaid item claim. They send a notice to the buyer that says they have to pay. If they do, then it's done. If they still don't, eBay will reverse your seller fees to you, so you get a credit back. So you don't have to spend any money you did up front. And the buyer will get an unpaid item strike, which do build up over time, and you get enough of them, and it shows up as a mark on the account, and you get too many of them, and they'll suspend the buyer's account.
Here's another thing, though, very important about that, is if it was an auction. If it was a buy now, you know, you cancel it, it's like, it was up there, the deal didn't go through, I put it up again. But if it's an auction, you've just wasted a bunch of time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can contact the second highest bidder.
Yep.
Now, the second highest bidder is always going to look at you sort of cockeyed because they're going to think, ah, you shilled me up. You raised the bid and now you're coming back and saying this. So sometimes it doesn't work when it's an expensive item. But, you know, if somebody bid $5 and then the person who didn't pay bid $5.50, you can always go to the $5 person and say, hey, you still want that? This guy didn't pay for it. And at those low levels, people don't, you know, they don't think anything of it. They just say, sure, send it to me.
That's it's called a second chance offer, isn't it?
Second chance offer.
And it's like, yeah, it lasts for like 48 hours or something like that after you make the offer.
Now, what typically happens is, let's say we're dealing with something that's a higher number, like $100. And the person bid, you know, the third highest bid is at $50. Second highest bid is at $90. And the highest bid is at $95. Well, the $95 person didn't pay. So you go to the $90 and the guy goes, nah, I don't want to pay you the $90. I'll pay you the $50. Because, you know, I'll pay you one rise over the third person. So that happens every so often. And you have to take into account because, you know, these people really are thinking, you know, is this seller treating me fairly? Did he shill me up? Shill bidding is to bid against somebody just to raise their price.
I've seen that misused in another way too, where a seller is using it basically to sell more than one item at a time. So they'll sell you one copy of that stamp and then they go to the next person down and say, hey, I have another one. Would you like one too for the bid that was right under?
That is typically not as much a problem, but what you have to just be aware of is when you contact that second person, you're opening a negotiation. You're not really asking, I mean, do they want it? You're kind of saying, do you want it and what price can we get? Don't just assume that it's going to be one price and it's done because, you know, that's not how eBay works. People want bargains. Everybody on eBay. I get offers and I got one the other day. Well, I got two offers. They show the extremes. One was a $125 stamp. A person sent me an offer for $4. And it's like,
cute.
Well, decline. Other times, you know, I'll have like a $50 item. And they'll counter it at $49 because I charge $1 of shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go like $50, but I want it free shipping. And so they'll counter me at $49. It's like, of course, I'll take it.
Yeah, we have for our seller account, we have a threshold set. You can tell it what you want to auto accept and auto reject, too. We learned the hard way with that one. We had some guy come through and offer $1 on 30 items that were at least $40 each.
Troll.
Yeah, it was a troll. So we learned you can go through and you can set a threshold where if your buy it now is at $100, it just automatically kicks out anything less than what you said at, like, say, 50-60%. So, well, you don't get any of the trolls anymore.
It was certified material. and he wanted it at catalog price.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that's what it was. That's yeah. right. Oh, that catalog's a dollar in the catalog. I'll offer 20
cents. Yeah. That's a 20-cent item.
I've seen that before.
So yeah. you can get rid of the trolls by setting a minimum percentage, and then you can do an auto accept, too, for what Cash was saying. So if it's up for 50 and someone offers you 49, you don't want to have to sit there and go through all that crap. You can just give it a threshold that says anything over 90%, automatically give it to them. So that's another way to expedite things a little bit. So the other side of conflict resolution with eBay is what can the buyer do? If something, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong on the seller's end. It can get lost in the mail. It can get damaged. If you are unlucky enough to find a buyer that's looking to try to con you out of something, which actually just happened to one of our friends, they claimed that they never received the item. He forgotten to put a tracking number on it. It was a $400 item.
Ooh.
Then the guy finally, he changed his story and says, oh, I got the item, but it's damaged.
Yeah.
So the seller goes, well, really, where's the damage? And it turned into this mess. The guy said he sent it back. He sent it purposefully to the wrong address. It was the same town, but they changed a letter in the street name. So it went to a different house, and he actually went and tracked it down. So, you know, occasionally you do get jerks like that that will try to abuse the system on the buyer end of it. So what they can do to you is eBay really is a buyer's market. They do everything they can to protect the buyer's end of things, because while they're collecting fees from the seller, that money came out of the buyer's pocket, ultimately. So they know where their interests lie. If the buyer raises a claim against you, there's only a couple of options that you have. If it's something where they're claiming that an item was lost in the mail,
there's no options.
There's no options. The only option is, did you provide a tracking number? Yes. Okay. No. Too bad.
Well, even that, a lot of times the tracking number will not solve the problem for you. What eBay is in a situation where buyers buy based on feelings, and sellers sell based on business. So a business has a certain loss ratio that they're going to accept. So if something gets lost, the buyer gets pissed and stops using eBay or talks bad about eBay. The seller, being a business person, just says cost of doing business.
Yeah.
So it's a total. So the eBay wants larger sellers who are going to be able to absorb losses and then not worry about the losses. And I don't. I lose about 1% of my stuff. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower. The worst countries that I ship to is Mexico and Russia. For a while, Russia, half my stuff was getting lost going to Russia. Half. One out of every two items. I'm not exaggerating. It's not like it was actually 10% or something. It was half of the stuff was just not getting through and disappearing. And I just put on my website, you know, I don't ship to Russia. And all these people were saying I didn't get it. And it's like, cost of doing business, here's refunds. Now, luckily, you know, I don't sell any really expensive items. But if it's over $100, I register, I insure it or register it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's less than $100, I sort of go by feel, you know, where is it going? If it's going to a problem place, I may not ship it. You know, if you buy a item from Mexico, I mean, it's $5, who cares? You know, if it gets lost, it gets lost. If it's $50, you win the auction. You send me the PayPal. I pull the lot. I put it in the envelope. I print the label. I stick the label on the envelope. It is ready to go. And I see at the bottom of the envelope, it says Mexico. I go, I am not shipping this.
Yeah, no. Just give them their money back in that case.
Refund here.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with countries that are questionable to send to, just Google search it, because there's a short list of them that it can be questionable. We had fun with one guy in Denmark, I think it was. Denmark or Norway, somewhere in Europe.
No, it was Denmark.
He bought a stamp from us for $150. We sent it to him, and we get this message like 2 months later saying, I never got my item. And we said, well, it had tracking. Are you sure? And he said, well, I got this package and I never accepted it because it said that there was $30 due on it when I got it. But it looked like maybe your name was on it.
It was tariff.
So, yeah, it came down to, well, what was that fee for? Did you pay the tariff on it? Well, you declared the value $150. You shouldn't have done that. You should have said it was a gift or it was worth only a dollar and would have been a tariff. Well, that's a violation of eBay fee, of eBay policy. So there are situations where, first off, always keep track of your communication with your buyer. If they want to complain and you want to try to fight it, eBay is going to look at that first. When the buyer starts a complaint, they give a week where they tell you, try to sort it out on your own. That's your chance to collect your information from the buyer and try to come to a resolution. If you don't do it at that point, eBay will step in. They will...
No, they won't.
Well, they did for us recently. They ask one side, they ask the other side, and then they make a decision. And the problem is since we're talking about selling on eBay, pretty much guaranteed it's going to go against you as a seller. Yep. And if you can't resolve it on your own, maybe come up with, okay, I'll give you a 20% discount or something rather than a full refund, eBay is just going to take the full money from your bank account directly and give it right back to the buyer.
Yep.
Do you want to know where that stamp is right now?
Where?
The guy refused to pay for it. It's in New York.
What?
Yeah, I did the tracking number on it. It's sitting in New York.
Unclaimed. So somewhere in New York, there's a package that was unclaimed. It's worth $150 to whoever finds it.
Yep. Look for the next stamp auction.
And one of the biggies for resolution that we did talk about before, just to remind you to be careful of, is they can also claim that it was not as described. So, Cash, what's a disclaimer that you use where it's just like the picture of the item and you say that it's the item as seen in the picture and you make no claims over condition or anything?
No, I do. I say this, unless I say there's a fault, there's no fault. Look at the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I show a picture. If it's a large lot, you know, we were discussing this the other time, you know, showing pictures of the front and the back. Sometimes you don't bother with the back, or I don't bother with the back. I just show the front. But I sell cheaper items. You know, I make my bread and butter with $10 and $15 sales. If you're selling a $100 item, you need something more than that. And if you're selling more than, well, my number is $300. If you sell more than $300, get a cert.
Yeah.
And then once you have the cert, it's like nobody's going to complain or anything. I do a lot of business. The complaints, you know, sometimes they say, hey, this stamp is hinged, and you get it back, and you don't know whether they swapped the stamps or not.
Yeah, that's a toughie, too.
So you just give them their money back. But again, you know, if I lose $15, it's like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
If I lose $150, it's like, hey, now we're talking about money.
Yeah, just be careful with how you describe your items. If you say it's never hinged and it catalogs $100 never hinged and you sell it for that much and it comes back previously hinged and the person gets it back, A, like Cash said, you have really no way of defending yourself against that because they can send you a different stamp back.
Well, you have a picture. I mean, there's a picture on eBay, so you can look at the picture. But if it's like in a large group, who knows?
And B, you know, if you're selling and you get somebody who's just plain old smarter than you or has a better eye, and it really is previously hinged, now it's worth like $2.
Yeah.
They're going to be upset because you said it's never hinged in your description. You're liable for it. Yeah. So just be careful with what you put in there.
Know what you're selling. I mean, if you're selling Germany, you better know that, just like I was talking about with the German Regum stamp. If you're selling Germany and you list a stamp as never hinged, it had better be never hinged. And by never hinged, it had better not had like a fly land on it and walk across it with wet feet. You know, there can be nothing wrong with the gum. It's got to be nice.
Yeah. That's it for our actual big topics we didn't cover in the first one. There are a couple of tips, though, that we can go over, some collaboration we had.
Well, most of that we didn't hit that everybody was asking about was more along the lines of marketing and advertising.
Oh, that's true.
How do you get people to your lots? How do you get people to your site?
Twitter
helps.
A lot of stores have Twitter accounts, and every time they put something new, they give their followers, you know, gets to their feed quick and they can click on it and buy it right away.
One really easy way to do it is once you start selling and you have a store established, eBay will provide you with a direct website link to your store. Well, you can then go and say for Jessica and I, we can go register with GoDaddy, jeffandjessicasstampstore.com. We pay for the domain name for a year for $10. It's dirt cheap. We don't even have to build the website. Just look up how to redirect where that website goes when somebody types it in and hits enter. Then when they do that, it's going to redirect to your eBay website that you've already established. So it's getting a website set up for free, or practically free. You're only paying a couple of dollars to register the domain name, and it goes straight to eBay. And now you can sit there and use that as your point for marketing and for directing people where to go. And it's much easier than going, okay, well, do a seller search on eBay and my seller name is blah, blah, blah. No, just go to this blah, blah, blah.com.
Right.
And that's it.
The second thing is, and this is inside of these stores, they have store categories. One of the ways you get people to go to your store is to sell one thing. To sell something that's one thing. Like if you sell U.S. stamps, that's great. And then your second category would be everything else. Huh. If you sell Philippines like I do, you have Philippines, and then you have a tab to go every place else. Find something that you enjoy doing and then sell the heck out of that, because the more categories you have, the more diversification you have in your store, the less traffic you will draw to it. People want the German stamp store. They don't want the worldwide stamp store and then search for Germany. So if you have two or three main things, like me, I like Switzerland, I like Philippines, and I like U.S. Three categories, I have three different ways, I advertise them three different ways. So it's really, they send you a little report each month, and I rarely look at it, but it tells what percentage of your customers are return customers.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I looked, and this was a while ago, I had 27% return customers.
Wow. For eBay, that's
pretty
good.
There's this 27 people who have bookmarked my store, mm-hmm, and go in there and look and see what I have.
And they come back.
Niche markets. I think that's the word we're looking for.
Yes, exactly.
Know your niche and own it.
Yes.
So instead of trying to be Walmart, be incredibly specific as to what you're selling.
Don't be the general store, be the specific store.
Yes. You sell red sweaters made of Angora wool, and that's it.
So then the other thing is, and you brought up the getting the website. I have a one-line ad in the APS magazine and a one-line ad in Lens. And all it says is PhilippineStampStore.com. And they put it in the Philippine category. And I think that one is like $4 a month and the other one is like $2 a month or something like that. It's only one line. It has no information. I mean, PhilippineStampStore.com pretty much says what it is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. So when you are looking for that domain name to register, be descriptive with it, and that can be your ad. That's an excellent idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of saying Jeff and Jessica's stampstore.com, it would be Jeff and Jessica's USRevenues.com.
Mm-hmm.
You know, specific to what it is that we're going to be selling.
And if you look at all the big sellers who have specific things, like Eric Jackson, you know, they specialize and they guide people to their specific thing. Other than that, you know, have a great time of selling, because, you know, there's a lot of upside. And there's a lot of downside. And I'll give you my history. I sort of just go by the numbers. I make money on about one-third of the things I sell on eBay. I lose money on one-third of the things I sell on eBay. And I break even on one-third of the things. So the break even is nothing. I just get my money back. I don't put a lot of labor into it. And so it's easy for me to just break even. When I lose, I don't lose that much. And when I win a lot. So I'm really looking for that one-third upside, which easily offsets the downside and then gives me a good profit. If you're looking to win 100% of the time on all your items, what you're going to end up having is 2,000 eBay lots that you're paying 10 cents per month for it to be on eBay that are overpriced. And you're not willing to lower the price. So you have your money tied up in this inventory that isn't going anywhere, that you're paying 10 cents an item to eBay to not sell. And I've heard a lot of people who say, oh, you know, I can't sell items for less than $50, you know, because of the time involved. And, oh, that's one of the things. You were going to say, I brought up that it takes me a couple minutes to list a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going to, I was going to say how I do that. Anyway, we'll do that in a second. So if you're looking to make money on 100% of your stuff, if you're in a collectibles market. Now, if you're selling laser pointers, look for, you know, whatever. If you want a 20% return on investment, and do it. But on stamps, stamps are all over the place. And you will, you might be 50-50, make money on 50, lose money on 50. You might be making money on 80 and losing money on 20, but the people who fail are the ones who make money on 100% of their stuff and then only sell 10% of their stuff.
Yeah, that brings up a very wise old dealer friend of ours, a man by the name of Ray, that I have a lot of respect for, taught me early on. He said, if you get greedy, you're going to lose out. He said, if you buy something for $20 and it catalogs 100 and everything you have is like that and you try to sell it for 100, you're going to get frustrated. Put it up for 30, take your 10 or 20% profit, and get out. You made your money, leave a little room for the next person, and you're going to end up selling 90% of what you have instead of selling only 10%.
Okay, so here's how I list fast. First thing is they have a couple of programs out there. They have Ultima and 6-bit. I use 6-bit. I have someone else scan my pictures for me. I pay them 25 cents a scan. So when I get it back, I'm ready to go. Then all I do is I tend to put 90% of the information in the title line, including whether it's hinged or never hinged, and I describe faults in the description range. I tend not to sell faulty stuff. If I have faulty stuff, I'll group it all together because I want to get rid of it. I'm not going to sell a $200 catalog value stamp with a tear in it and try to get $30 for it. I'm going to make a $1,000 lot and try to get $50. And just move it out. Just get rid of it. Somebody out there is going to go, wow, I just bought $1,000 worth of stuff for $50. It's like, no, you bought $50 worth of stuff for $50. So I churn my stuff really quick. If I can just drag over my picture, type in or paste, cut and paste. I love cut and paste. If I can cut and paste in descriptions and titles, it gets really super easy. Where everybody dies is they start from the beginning. They don't use a program. They go through eBay. And eBay has like 50 little bits of information you have to enter.
Mm-hmm. It's tedious.
It's very tedious. And you have to do 50 little check marks and 50 little type-ins and stuff like that. That'll kill you.
You get 10 items listed an hour if you're fast.
Yes.
Doing it through eBay's regular system.
I'll do 200 lots in an hour because all that stuff is put in automatically by the program.
That's crazy.
So anyway, anybody who's interested, look for 6-bit. That's the one that I use. Look for Optiva. That's the one I believe you use, right? Optiva?
Optiva.
Optiva.
There's another service.
I know Scott uses Optiva too.
Yeah.
If you're doing it out of the eBay lister, you're probably wasting a lot of time. However, you have to pay Optiva and 6-bit.
It's so worth it though, believe me.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely worth it.
Okay, so a couple of last little tips, some of our favorite little things that we do. One of them is you always can use stamps to mail things to your buyers. And it just looks better. We've gotten metered mail from a stamp collector before. And it's just like, come on, are you going to be that lazy about it? So, but the big fear is if you use stamps, how are you going to worry about tracking if it's an expensive item? You can actually go to the USPS counter at your local post office and tell them that you would like to pay for tracking, but you can actually use the stamps as currency and affix them to the envelope to cover the cost of paying for a tracking number, and they will accept it. So it's an extra cool little bonus because they'll slap the little barcode sticker on there for tracking, but you've paid for it with stamps, so it's still a totally stamp-filled cover, and it looks really neat when you do it that way. And you're protected on expensive items. Another one is if you're just starting out, you can end up getting limited by both PayPal and eBay as to how many items you can sell at once and how long it takes you to get your money. on a brand new account, it can take as long as 30 days before your money becomes available to you on something you've sold, which can be a little tedious if you're dealing with that at first. So there's two ways to get that lifted. First off, if you can get your buyers to go ahead and leave you positive feedback about the item, that will free it up a lot faster. The moment they leave that positive feedback, I think it becomes available within 24 hours after they leave their feedback. So if they're sitting on their heels a little bit waiting to leave feedback, just drop them a message. Hey, you know, I'm kind of new. If you're happy with how it went, leave me some feedback. And then that'll free up your money right away so that you have access to it. Once you have a couple of successful sales under your belt, once you've broken into the double digits, you can actually call eBay and PayPal's customer service numbers and talk to them about getting your account extended. And they will give you a threshold as to what goal you need to meet, where they will cut your time down eventually from that 30 days all the way down to instantly available. I know mine and Jessica's account and Cash's account, especially Cash, he's been around for forever. There's zero waiting. The moment the buyer hits the pay button, the money is there available for us. And they will also eventually lift the limit on how many items you can list at one time. When you first start out, it's limited to a few dozen. Once you've been around a while and you call them and they verify that you're a real person and you have some good feedback, they'll make it limitless. I think our cap right now is at like 10,000 items at once. Okay, and last one, if something does go wrong and you get negative feedback, if you deserve it, you're kind of stuck with it. But if it's totally erroneous, like the buyer leaves some sort of comment like, I don't know, what would be a good douchey comment that people leave, where it just has nothing to do with the item or the process at all. Well, somebody says something like, I think the seller's a douchebag. You know, if it's something just totally out of the blue like that, there is an appeal process you can look up. And if it's totally off the wall, eBay will sometimes remove it. You just have to work with them on it. Last little couple of things to avoid to do not shill bid. Do not open another account or have friends bid on things for you to raise the price. You will get caught and it is a bannable offense. Don't ever offer things for sale outside of eBay in your listing. Again, it's a bannable offense, and more often than not, you will get caught. There is a reporting system built in where anybody can report something that looks fishy, and it does happen all the time. Don't post any private contact information in a listing. Again, it's a bannable offense, and who really would want that kind of attention anyway? And don't ever try to work outside of eBay either using their marketing. So don't try to message a buyer saying, I'll sell it to you if you PayPal me money directly. I will send it to an address that you give to me. Just work through eBay, because again, that's something that they can catch pretty easily, and it's a bannable offense. So I think that's all of our little tips for selling on eBay. I think we're finally done with that topic.
Or you can always hit us up on Facebook and make comments. We do respond.
Yeah, we do. If you have more specific questions, go ahead and hit us up. It's never a problem. We always get back to our fans.
So the contact information for that is, you can email us at stampshowtoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook, stampshowtoday, and our website, www.stampshowtoday.com, with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on a Google Voice answer machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
This is Chad Snee. I'm the editor of Lynn Stamp News and the Scott Publishing Company. And you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Share Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets that can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today! Address unknown. No such number. No such zone.